Next up on the deadpan, an unrelated kitchen. Oh, I'm all tingly.
Hello, deadpan. Just a Joe here. Cleaning out my pantry, and in the back of a cabinet I found this. I won't share it all with you. I'll spare you the entire contents of my pantry. But I wanted to share this gem with you. It's a little gem from
Jack Mangan.
And it's a double
deadpan
moistness packet. That's what it says. Double
deadpan
moistness packet. You may do with that what you will. Oh, let me read you the instructions. They're just as much fun. Knead for 15 seconds before opening.
Deadpan
moistness packet.
Hey, and welcome to Deadpan
number
152.
I am.
All right. Enough of that. I'm your host, Jack Mangan, a.k.a. the guy who applied for the position of Lex Luthor's evil assistant, but who Mr. Luthor decided was less qualified and competent than Otis.
Otisburg? It's a little bitty place.
So here we are. Over a month now, still having feed troubles. Made a few changes, so hopefully this episode is the one that that ends that slump. But if not, then I appreciate that you're continuing to come and download the stuff manually, like it's 1993 and you're getting files off of a BBS. This is eventually going to become really, really, really old school technology, and it's going to be Jack Mangan's Deadpan Papyrus. Anyway, this is an episode. We do have some content, so I hope you'll stick around. Especially if you enjoy Minnesotan rutabagas. Or is the plural just rutabaga? I don't know.
8 years on from Firefly, 5 years on from Serenity, you still can't stop the signal. Striding like a colossus into the new decade, conquering new...
That's a little over the top, don't you think?
Well, I guess, but he's right. We're still here.
Just not quite so much with the striding. Walking confidently. How's that sound?
Fine. Just as long as the signal stays a podcast all about Joss Whedon's Firefly and Serenity.
Oh, no question there. We're continuing to explore the verse, same as we have for the last 5 years.
But this year, with some new crew, new articles...
new interviews, new features...
and a new website, a new forum, and a blog.
But still at the same old address, www.serenityfirefly.com, and still coming to your MP3 player every 2 weeks.
Plus, we've got lots of our regular segments like News from the Verse, Broadwaves, The Terraformers, and Feedback.
And we want you to join us.
The Signal.
Helping to carry on building the Browncoat community.
It starts here.
The Signal.
So, do you think it's ever happened where a furry, while in the midst of, furry activities, just stopped and said, hold on, we need to stop. I feel ridiculous.
Okay, I know this is going to be totally unoriginal, but here you go. Happy birthday to you. I feel like I'm 12. Happy birthday to you. You can play last year's, it's probably better. Happy birthday, dear Jack. It's really fun to say your name. Jack. All right, now I'm just being silly. Happy birthday to you. So happy Deadpan birthday to you, Jack. With my unoriginal. I can't even talk. It's flipping middle of the night. I'm coming home from work, and I need a nap. Aren't you sick of me saying I'm tired all the time? I bet you are. So anyway, there you go. Happy Deadpan birthday. Do you feel old? because you look good. That's all I got to say. Bye.
Go. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to Jack. Happy birthday to you.
How can you say, deadpan is the way?
Deadpan is the way.
And what's your name? What's your name?
Fletcher.
Can you spell that?
Yes, I will read D-C-H-E-R.
Spell it again?
F-E.
Spell Fletcher.
F. L-E-T-C-H-E-R.
Good job. Goodbye.
Bye.
Spoiler alert. So after spending all that time with the kid who sees dead people, Wash figures out that he's actually a ghost, that he died after landing the ship like a leaf on the wind. And his last words were Rosebud, which is a sled from his childhood on Tatooine, which was lonely because he thought his dad was dead. But as it turned out, the crying game chick was actually not a chick at all, but was Darth Vader, who told him he was his father, who was actually pretending to be the dead body in the middle of the room the whole time while the Dread Pirate Robert sawed off his foot, even though Max had brought him back from the dead, keeping his eyes closed while the bad guys opened the Ark and had their faces melted off, while Ben released the smoke monster and Jack was actually Claire's brother, and Juliet actually ended up with Sawyer, and Rachel and Ross got back together, because it turned out that the Soylent Green was gremlins. But they did care that Maggie shot Mr. Burns under orders from Ra's al Ghul, who was not actually Ken Watanabe, but Liam Neeson, a.k.a. Professor Plum in the library, with Miss Scarlet and a candlestick.
Deadpan is the motherfucking Kiwi way.
Excellent.
All right, Deadpan. So here we go. We'll set the scene. This took place 1994 in the VCB at Montana State University in Bozeman, the Visual Communications Building. Inside the VCB, there was a small television studio, and there was a rows and rows of chairs set up and a big screen. It's actually set up as a film studies classroom. There's a big crash mat in front of the screen. I step up on top of that, sort of bouncy. I'm wearing light khaki pants, a white t-shirt. Projecting on me and the screen behind me throughout this performance were various color swatches, basically. You know, the whole screen was one color that would pulse second after second, different color, primary colors, you know, purples and reds and, you know, all sorts of color panels. And interspersed throughout this, they'd cycle up every, you know, second or so, and then there'd be a pulsing period where they'd come up, you know, fractions of a second. And every once in a while, there'd be a fraction of a second film of a single frame shot of I think it was a weasel. It was just some nature footage that happened to be on hand at the post-production house where I was putting together these color swatches and everything, and it was, they were nature films. So, along with this, there was an accompaniment of improvised guitar played by Darcy's ex. And here is the text that I read that day back in 94. Entitled Rutabagas. Albert Einstein frolicked in the orange foam drink tides while galloping emus paraded past the dance club. His hand smelled of mayonnaise. Jacob lifted the cup of tea to his bright orange lips but spilled the blue syrup on the foot of the mountain of vegetables within the wading pool. Rampant, rampaging rabid rabbits rushed rapidly to the rutabagas, ripping them to ribbons. Suddenly, a large hole was rent in the fabric of space-time, and there emerged the hulking mass of TV Teddy, brandishing a long sword. Jacob dropped the candy cup, which was devoured by a stray rabbit, and began to run. Pursued by an ursine beast is no way to live, so Jacob stopped running and died. Teddy needed to get away. He ran to the freeway and hopped onto the back of a speeding flatbed. Fred wasn't about to put up with some hitching circus clown, so he pulled off at the next exit, found a large parking lot, got out of the cab, and promptly lost his head. Teddy needed a place to hide. A nearby building with a star and banner beckoned to him. The star and banner was his proper home, he felt. Here he should rule mankind. Frank headed toward the security office. His wife Lisa's head had just been lopped off. He hadn't noticed, though, because he'd noticed at the same time that she'd dropped their precious gold rock. All he had left was a green star. Anyhow, by this time, men with stars and banners had chased the inter-universal homicidal televisual swashbuckler into the main rotunda, where the vast crowd parted and ran away very fast. MOA security forces had TV Teddy backed into the wall behind the elevator banks and were pressing closer. Terrified onlookers watched as massive furry fists smashed through the plate glass back wall of the elevator, scaling the wall by smashing their own paw holds. The chase was on, through crowded halls, past bears, past music stores, past toy stores, past places where people in red checked shirts hawked chicken beneath sets of steer horns, past the mountain, past Nordstrom's, and out onto a glass brick walkway in the West Market, which gave way, sending Teddy to a furry splat 3 stories below. The security forces formed a ring around the exploded form of TV Teddy. The PA came to life and a distorted, evil voice intoned, "Attention shoppers, attention shoppers, this is but the first wave. Soon you shall all die at the hands of your own consumerism." Roger found this proclamation strange, but he wasn't thinking about the day's events. This chase had put things off far too long. Roger made his way away from the rubbernecking crowd and to the security locker room. He locked himself into a stall. Let's face facts. Roger was a wanker. Roger was a perennial wanker. When he wasn't wanking, he was thinking about when he'd be wanking next. Some people might take offense at his status as a compulsive masturbator, but Roger didn't see a problem. He wasn't fucking young girls. He wasn't killing anyone, nor screwing the dead. He wasn't anally penetrating his grandmother, and he almost never took a shit on public transportation. Today, like most days, Roger wanked until his willy bled. But this didn't stop him. He used the blood for lubrication. He used the pain as stimulation. He used his fear as intoxication. Today, however, Roger's willy freed itself from his clammy grip, shriveled back up inside him, and shot up and ate his pancreas. Meanwhile, the rutabagas were numerous.
Why, sure! Climb into my spoon!
This way, hot!
You are wrong!
Null Operation says, at Jack Mangan, for mobile users, this might be useful on the site http://www.bravenewcode.com/wptouch. I just tried it out in my blogs, and so far the mini theme works great for all of my browsers on Android. Had someone with a Palm Pre and a BlackBerry test theirs, and it seems to be working well. If you're on a mobile browser, click my name in your if you want to see what it looks like. CJ says, I'd just like to point out that nobody is playing with me. Nomad Scry says, Star Karate Chop Star. CJ says, this was actually the first of the day. No fair posting a show while I'm still at work. Wah, I am on eternal hold.
I have my crimper. I have my crimper. I have my crimper. I have my crimper.
Love it. Deadpan is the way.
Previously on The Questers from FPM. The questing party finally reached the home for infinite winners, the location of the object of their quest, their friend Chris. However, the home was guarded by Jessica, who informed them that at present, Chris was only permitted to see and interact with other females. John stormed off in a huff, and the others followed him. Then Ditto, a shapeshifter,
came to them and offered to turn into an invisibility shield to sneak the men into the home. Amy and the others accepted the offer and set off to talk to Jessica again. The Questers from FPM, a serial by Amy Bowen. Episode 9, The Reunion.
So you've decided to play by the rules?
Jessica said to Amy and Rhea as soon as she saw them approaching. Yeah, we have, said Amy. After we got our friend John calmed down, we all talked about it a bit, and we came up with a compromise. The men just went around to the other side of the house in search of some heroes to learn from and write ballads about. Rhea and I are willing to go in and see Kristen by ourselves.
Very well, then. You are welcome here.
Jessica reached up with her strange weapon and inserted the blade into a socket in the castle wall. The portcullis rose.
Kristen is in room 3663. Take the stairs to the third floor, turn right, and it'll be on your left-hand side.
Thank you. Amy and Rhea entered the castle. The stairways and hallways inside the castle were made of the same clean white stone as the exterior. The passageways didn't twist, but they and the doors on either side of them were all alike. After a few minutes, Amy found room 3663 and knocked on the door, her pulse pounding with anticipation.
"Come in,"
called a voice from inside.
"It's not locked."
Amy opened the door a crack and peeked around it. "Chris?"
"Amy?"
said Chris, seeing her. "Chris! Chris!" Amy ran into Chris's room and flung her arms around her friend. A very surprised Rhea scrambled her way down Amy's long traveling dress, landing awkwardly but unhurt on the floor. "Chris! I can't believe it's you! I can't believe we finally made it!" Chris hugged Amy back just as hard.
"Made it? What's going on?"
"We came here on a quest to see you." Chris's arm slackened a little.
"You're not going to try to take me back to the living world, are you? You know that never ends well."
"Of course not. We do know that. We're just here to talk to you. I need to know everything you knew about working with the Podangans."
"Everything? You haven't..." "Oh, no. It's not working out, is it?"
"Not as well as I had hoped." "His Majesty made me chief ambassador in your place, and I did everything I could to carry on what you had started, and I still failed. Everything started going downhill around me, no matter how hard I tried. I just don't understand them as well as you do. So, His Majesty decided to send me and some companions on a quest to retrieve your knowledge. It was either this or wait for me to learn everything you know by trial and error, and if we waited that long, the Alliance would probably fall apart entirely. Oh, Chris, I should have been able to handle it on my own. I feel like such a failure. Can you ever forgive me?"
"Of course, sweetie. I forgive you. Learning those things took me a long time, you know. It was probably too much to expect you to master them all at once, and so suddenly. You're a good ambassador, and I'm very happy to have the chance to tell you what you need to know. The one thing I've regretted most about, you know, being dead, is that I never told you all that. I'm absolutely thrilled to see you."
"Thank you. I'm thrilled to see you, too."
"So are we,"
said John. Amy turned around, letting go of Chris. Chris stared in shock at the 7-foot-tall dome of pink jelly that hadn't been there a few moments ago. As she watched, the pink jelly contracted and shaped itself into human form. There beside it stood John Bowes, Ed, Wanderwolf, Jeremy, and Joe.
"Oh my gosh, you're all here. This is incredible."
"Of course,"
said Wanderwolf.
"This quest has been a team effort."
Chris greeted the rest of the questers with hugs. John introduced Ditto to her, and Ditto explained how he had smuggled the man into the castle, and how he had closed the door behind them and opened a hole in the dome so that they could both see and hear Chris and Amy's reunion.
Oh, I see. Well, I think the kingdom and the preservation of the alliance are more important than those rules, too.
Oh, good.
So, tell me more about the rest of your quest. How did you get into the underworld, anyway? What have you seen?
John, would you like to do the honors?
I'm not ready with a song just yet. Someone else can tell about it.
The group started telling Chris about the strange things that had happened on their quest, with each person jumping in to tell what he or she had done. During the story of the battle with the zombie fish and the encounter with Jack Mangan, Chris asked,
Garlic salt? What's with that?
A few foods from the underworld have magical effects,
explained Rhea.
Chocolate is an aphrodisiac. Garlic salt kills undead things, including undead microbes. Salmon mousse kills living people.
I'll remember that. Did you get the garlic salt?
Yeah, but it took us a while.
They continued telling Chris their story.
Wow,
she said when they were finished.
That was so cool, guys. You're all heroes in my book.
Thank you.
Now, shall we get down to business? It'll take a while to tell you everything, Amy. You're all welcome to stay here for the night if you need to. It's only a one-bedroom suite, but the carpet's nice and soft.
Thanks, Chris. We'd love to. Chris and Amy spent the rest of the afternoon and some of the evening talking about Podango and the subtleties of its language and culture. They even talked while Amy was helping Chris make one of her famous dinners. The guests enjoyed Chris's cooking very much, even though they knew they were only eating more of the phantom food of the underworld. That evening, Chris and her guests enjoyed each other's company while they celebrated their friendship and the successful completion of the quest with drinks and with songs from John. Ditto joined in the festivities too. He had to stay with the group so that he could smuggle the men back out of the castle when they left the next day. The guests all slept soundly on the soft, thick carpet in Chris's room, satisfied and happy. On the outside of the window of Chris's room, a honeybee spread her wings, pushed off from the windowpane, and flew away from the home for infinite winners. She had found them. Her superiors would be most pleased. You have been listening to The Questers from FPN, a serial by Amy Bowen. Thanks to Jessica Shero, Kristen Mayo, Paul Mackey, Jack Hosley, and Rhea Dinas for contributing their voices to this episode. The songs heard in this episode were Journey's End by Guardian Mind Mix, The Rule by Kevin MacLeod, Petit Requiem by Cyclops, Horse by Evren, spelled 3VR3N, Clear Air by Kevin MacLeod, and Thingamajig and House of Evil, both by Jason Shaw. Jason Shaw's music is at audionautix.com and Kevin MacLeod's music is at incompetech.com. All other music is available at Music Alley. The sound effect in this episode was provided by the Freesound Project at freesound.org.
They feed each other's anger, they kick the door, they, you know, kick things around, they kick furniture, they just curse and get in people's faces.
You are wrong.
Crimper. Moistness packet.
Hey there, Deadpan. This is LeJean, some guy from Chandler. Deadpan is the way.
Venomon says, remember to hum the X-Files tune as you read this. http://en.m.wikipedia.org/wiki/uvb-76? Was redirected equals true. The Energizer Bunny says, at Vanamond, we've all moved to the new posting. Jack did the episode early. Ed from Texas says, Hearst Castle is definitely a place to be visited. Too bad he never got to finish it. And the first of the week was Vanamond says, right here, right now. And what happened was there were actually two listings, or there was an Unshow which we released yesterday, which had about 128 plus a full episode, which was the Duel of the Fates finale. And that had about, I don't know, somewhere in the upper 300s. So we averaged, I think we crossed the 500 for the entire week when you add the two together. Luckily, we weren't playing the greasy jelly bean game. I must reiterate my appreciation for you, to you, for downloading this episode. Because you probably went and got it manually, unless your podcatcher has been behaving, which doesn't seem to have been the case lately. And again, my apologies for the tech tardness around here. I must also say thank you very much to everyone who's contributed ever, really, from episode 7 up to now. But I especially appreciate those of you who are contributing stuff to Deadpan now. I actually have some fantastic stuff. I actually have 3 great things for the next episode. One from Lejean, some guy from Chandler. One from CJ. And another thing from Amy Bowen. And actually a non-pod contribution that I got. Actually, this is a birthday gift. I went and had lunch with Dan Charette of the Out of the Coffin and Lilith's Love podcast novel. Out of the Coffin is his podcast. I had lunch with him, and he gave me this strange little brown paper bag and said, here, happy birthday. And actually bought lunch. So I have to say say big thanks to Dan Charette. He said, here, happy birthday. And so I opened the bag, and there inside is a jar full of nipples. Not, you know, taken from some human like he's a serial killer, but, you know, rubber nipples to go on baby bottles. And they were oily and disgusting. So I got a jar of greasy nipples as a birthday present from Dan Charette. And yes, pictures will be forthcoming. And actually, if you don't get that, then, you know, just ask. It's not quite as weird as it sounds. Although, you know, I suppose it is still kind of strange. I lead a really strange life. But anyway, I do encourage you, even aside from the fact that I play the part of an important character in that story, Lilith's Love, that is, I encourage you to go and listen to Dan Charette's patio book, or not, actually, it's not a patio book yet, it's a podcast novel at the moment. All right, I'm already outro babbling. Look forward to excellent content from lots of people next week, including yourself, because you will send me something. The voicemail line is 206-350-TOMI, 206-350-8664, or you can email it to me, sphericaljackm@gmail.com. I don't really know what you're going to send me. You could send me a dumbass memory, some favorite song lyrics of yours, some of the bad poetry or writings that you created as a youngster. I'm not really too concerned, but I do look forward to what you're going to send me, and thank you very much for offering to do that. Hopefully by then we'll have the feed issues ironed out, and I think we're done here. But before we go, you know, speaking of the Swedish chef, I wonder, who do you think he'd name as his favorite female Icelandic singer? All right, not coming back after the music. Deadpan is the way. Thank you very much. No, that's not it. Thank you.
Thank you.